week one of the Kevin Callahan Monmouth Football Show, getting ready for week two of the 2012 college football season here in West Long Branch. We'll have the season opener at home coming up, the home opener, I should say, coming up on Saturday against the University of Rhode Island. Just spent some good time with KB Asante talking about the offense from last week and obviously coming up later on this season. We'll talk some defensive stuff right now with one of the team captains, Reggie Hildebrandt Jr., who joins us for a few minutes on the show. Reggie, how are you tonight?
I'm doing fine.
Good to see you. Tough loss on Saturday. We'll get your take on it as well. When you think about what you guys did well defensively, what was it? Explain that.
I think we did well with coming back stronger in the second half, with defense holding the Mountain Hawks to 0 points in the second half, and basically just came back hustling and trying to win the game.
Lehigh, with one of the top wide receivers in all of FCS football, and Ryan Spadola, had close to 100 catches last year and really was having a very good first half in that game on Saturday. I think he finished up in the first half with 7 catches. You guys really shut him down. I mean, obviously, he had to be a focal point for you all during the week of preparation. But what's the difference as a cornerback when you match up with somebody that has such a good first half, but then in the second half, things totally turn around?
I mean, I matched up to him by just taking all the work I had in film study and just focusing on little tips and reminders that where is he lining up in the boundary or in the field, and just taking that, translating that towards the field, and just basically just calming down and getting into the game and just playing football.
What's the level of frustration, I guess, after, you know, KB kind of gave the offense his take on it? I would imagine your take on the defensive side, pretty similar. What's the level of frustration after you guys walk off that field and say, boy, we really had a team on the ropes, but still, you know, start off the year 0-1?
Yes, we was extremely frustrated. I was too, and it's tough to take a loss like that because we worked so hard coming back in the second half. But like Coach Kyle said, we had to come back stronger. We had to start stronger and start faster in the first half, so we don't have to come back and do a late, you know, win. We'll come back for a win.
Coach, it's obviously an area that probably needed some improvement due to injuries last year and a little bit of depth added this season. I know as a former secondary person as well, for you, when you look at the unit this year, I know you feel like it's a deeper unit and probably a bit more talented than it was last year. What's Reggie's role in it?
Well, Reggie's the leader of the group, certainly is one of our captains and a guy who's been on the field for us. You know, he really leads by example back there. He's one of the hardest workers on our team. I think every one of the defensive backs looks up to Reggie, and they look to him for that leadership. They look to him to demonstrate that poise during the course of the game. At halftime on Saturday, you know, there was a little bit of frustration. We were down 21 points. We gave up a touchdown pass with 56 seconds to go in the half. But the mood in the locker room when Coach Clesidor and the defensive backs got together was one of calmness, and Reggie was the calming factor there. He got the guys together and told them that it's just a matter of us executing what we've done many, many times before, you know, going through with our reads and making sure that our eyes are in the right place and just playing smart football. And really, if you look at it, that's what happened in the second half. So you've got to credit Reggie's leadership and what he was able to do and how he talked to the younger guys in the position.
We heard the name Clesidor in there, Marvin Clesidor, the new defensive backs coach, Reggie. So for you, you have a new position coach this year. Is that something that you need to go through a period of adjustment?
Oh, yeah, it was a little period of adjustment. But I like Coach Clesidor because he doesn't always point out the positive what you do. He always puts out everything that you need to improve. And it's hard to make him happy and satisfy him, but I guess that's making me a better DB overall, so I appreciate it.
How important is this week for you guys? Obviously, nobody wants to start out 0-2. Nobody wants to start out 0-1, but 0-2 seems a bit more of a gloom and doom than 0-1 does. A lot riding on this game against URI, I would think, on Saturday for you guys.
I mean, we're starting out. We should be fine. I think I'm confident enough, and this is a real big game for us because we have to win at home. Because last year, that wasn't we did. So this season we have to win at home, and I'm very confident we're going to pull a win out at home this Saturday.
Yeah, we're not going to start out 0-2, I can tell you that right now. We're going to take the positives from last week's game. We're going to improve upon them. We're going to take the things that we didn't do very well, make sure that we do them well this week. There's no doubt in my mind we'll be 1-1 after Saturday.
Reggie, a couple more before we let you go. What's it like for you as just like KB was, a transfer student? You know, you kind of solidified your spot on the team, I thought, last year, even though you battled through some injuries. And now this year you're back as a captain. I mean, you get voted as a captain and picked by the coaches, but voted on by the players on your team. What's that make you feel when you think about, hey, everyone feels like I should be a leader of this football team?
Yeah, I felt very honored to be voted as a captain by my peers and for us to go through the strenuous interview process with the coaches. It was different, but I really like that approach by the coaches because they want somebody up there that's going to really lead the team and going to put the team in the right direction.
Coach, I know that was something different that you had done this year when you picked captains. It was almost a boot camp of interviews.
Well, it was an interview process, you know, and that process started with the team nominating those individuals, their teammates who they thought would best serve our team as captains. And then we took the guys who received the most nominations, and then they had to have an individual meeting with me. They had to prepare an in-depth statement on why they thought they would be a captain and what qualities they possessed that would help them in their captaincy. Then I sat and met with them again and went through what my expectations of them would be as a captain and how I thought a captain should handle himself and conduct himself. And then they had to sit down in front of the entire coaching staff and answer questions. It was probably about a 20-minute interview. We didn't pull any punches. None of the staff members did. I'm not going to say it was easy.
It wasn't easy at all.
And, you know, we let them know that this was a very serious thing that we were talking about, and we wanted to see how they handled themselves.
Reggie's smiling as if you still have nightmares about that interview process. A little bit of a firing squad.
It was kind of tough. All the questions coming at you was like that. It's just, yeah, I think on your feet, though, but I really appreciate it.
Reggie, one of the guys who is so important to the defensive backfield is Elijah Phillips. Did not play this past week against Lehigh with a hamstring injury that he's been battling. I know when I saw him on the field, he expected to be back for this week's game. We haven't quite gotten to that point of the show in terms of who's in and who's out. But in terms of the overall feel, having him back there as opposed to not having him back there, how important is it overall for the group?
I mean, yes, a lot of people are big part of our secondary, and yes, I feel comfortable back there, but we all as a secondary, we work hard this offseason, and I'm confident if anybody back there behind me, because that's the kind of support and love I have for my teammates.
It's a group, Reggie has said, it's a very tight-knit group, and as we had talked about before, Matt, it's a position I think that's much deeper than it was a year ago. You know, Elijah certainly has game time experience, and that's something that's valuable. But as Reggie mentioned, there's Elijah, there's Mitchell Pollard, there's Pat Gray, there's Andrew Sutton, there's Clark Coe, there's Muhammad Kroma, Jameson Zacharias, Brett Hopple, and even a couple of our new additions that we brought in this year, true freshmen, that have showed that they have the ability to contribute. So it is a deep group, and it's a very hard-working group. And, you know, you see development on a steady basis with them, almost on a daily basis.
Reggie, to follow up on the last question before we let you go, as a captain and a senior, you know, you're leaving a legacy in a way when you do finish up your playing days, even though that probably seems it is months from now, but might not even be thinking about anything like that. How much teaching do you do as an older, experienced player to some of the new guys who are in the system?
Well, I try to teach more by example, but I do put my 2 cents in there sometimes. But I just go out to practice every day, hit the film study every day, try to show the kids what I read, like before pre-snap or like three-step to or getting a funnel. On the practice field, I try to go out to have a positive attitude. Even though you're tired, you got to suck it up and just do it and just get your technique right, because that's what's going to carry you through the football game.
Coach, good role model for the younger players to look up to?
Excellent role model. I think one of the reasons that, you know, Reggie received so many nominations when it came to the team selecting individuals who they would want to serve as their captains was Reggie's work ethic and the way he conducts himself both on and off the field. He's a good student. He cares about academics. He's going to graduate here at the end of the year. But once he gets on the field, he works extremely hard, and that work ethic is very evident in the weight room as well. Watching him perform all winter in the weight room and in our conditioning program, he's a tireless worker, and other people pick up on that. And I think there's guys on our team, and in particular in the secondary, who want to emulate that hard work and that example that Reggie sets.
Reggie, appreciate the time tonight. We'll certainly talk to you down the line. Good luck on Saturday against URI. Be good to see you get that first win of the season and get rid of that nasty home losing streak.
Yes, we are. Thank you, too. I appreciate it.
All right. That is Reggie Hildebrandt, Jr., one of the team captains here for Monmouth this season. We step out and take a timeout. When we come back, we'll take a trip down memory lane. And so Monmouth celebrating their 20th year of football. We'll be joined by one of the owners of Jack's Gold Line Stand and a member of the first Monmouth football team back in 1993. That's Tim Canavan. We step out, take a quick break. You're listening to the Kevin Callahan Monmouth Football Show here on the Shore Sports Network.
You're listening to the Kevin Callahan Monmouth Hawks Football Show on the Shore Sports Network, WOBM AM 1160 and 1310, and at shoresportsnetwork.com.
We are back here from Jack's Goal Line Stand in the West End, the newly redone Jack's Goal Line Stand. Renovation taking place during the summer. The place looks great. It'll be our home here every Tuesday from 7 to 8 o'clock for the Kevin Callahan Monmouth Football Show. This is a special year, obviously, for Monmouth football in their 20th year. And all the way back in 1993, kind of an unknown bunch of guys got together and started football here. And one of those guys, who is still among the leaders in sacks in the top 10, believe it or not, all these many years later, is Tim Canavan, who's one of the owners here of Jack's. Timmy, good to see you again. Thanks for having us, number one, for the season. Appreciate a couple minutes to talk about what Monmouth football is all about.
No, great. It's great that you guys are here.
Hey, you know what, Tim? We really appreciate you hosting the show this year. I know you and your partner, Nick Petiti, graciously offered the place here at Jack's, and I echo what Matt said. It looks great. Your renovations look tremendous here, and I'm very happy for you.
Thanks. A lot of hard work went into these renovations. So
Timmy, you are a perfect person to talk about what Monmouth football has, how it has changed in 20 years. If you can think back to 1993, what are your first remembrances of being part of the first ever football team?
118-year-old guys taking over a university. It was it's quite the experience. There's just a lot of.
I've got to echo that. You know, that first year, that first day of practice, when 104. Basically, freshmen showed up for the start of football. Tim was an older player at that time. He was a sophomore, I believe, or junior.
Junior.
And, you know, he'd come to us and transferred into Monmouth. And I remember the day he walked into my office and said, hey, I'd like to be on the team. And I said, well, you know, show up here in August, and we've got a spot for you. But that was, I think that's an accurate comment, 118-year-old guys. And that was quite an experience, Matt.
And since that point, I mean, you played 2 years at Monmouth. You still have had a connection here to the program as a local business owner for the last several years. How have you seen the program grow and change in the two decades?
God, the size of the guys, they're giant now. Oh, my gosh. It's incredible the teams that they're playing in. And the caliber they're playing at. I mean, they're playing Lehigh, and God, so close to getting that win this weekend. Last year, taking Villanova, which was a national champion a couple years ago. I don't know if I ever thought we would, you know, back in 93, it was one AA non-scholarship, which was, you know, essentially Division III. I didn't know, even at the time, that Division I, AA, like full, would be possible. And, you know, if the team gets their job done this year, they'll make the playoffs, which would be great.
I know losses usually stick around longer for coaches than they do players. Do you remember the first game, which was a loss to Stonehill?
Yeah, God, first 2 points. It was a muffed extra point we intercepted and ran back down the field against Stonehill,
yeah,
correct?
That's correct, yeah.
And the first win against St. Peter's at
home? Oh, God. I never thought we would win that game we missed extra points. During the season, they even had me try out to kick extra points.
That game, we were down, I remember this, we were down 17 points with 9 minutes to go in the game. And we found our way back in it, and we got it scored back to being It was 42-41. We were on a drive. We came down to a 4th and 8 on about the 10-yard line going in, and we had to have a discussion as to whether or not we were going to kick it or go for it on there. And, you know, we ended up kicking it, and Randy Brewster kicked the winning play through. And I think I never saw a team that happy in only their third game of college football ever to get that first victory.
Yeah, I remember the size of the offensive tackles that game, almost 335, almost 320, and I'm sitting there, 210. I was a bit scared. But I still remember Willie Holder taking a pass, going from the right sideline to the left, back to the right, and down. Doug Ross back, what, 400-plus yards?
400 yards passing that day.
Tim Canavan joining us here on the Kevin Callahan Monmouth Football Show. Tim, one of the owners of Jack's Goal Line Stand, our host for the show from 7 to 8 o'clock here in the West End every Tuesday, talking some Monmouth football from years and years ago. Tim, how many guys do you keep in touch with from all the way back in the day?
You know, I'm in a very lucky situation being a restaurant owner here. I get to see, every year's guys. I'm friends with everybody from every football team that's played here. A lot of the guys I see, Jose last year, great guy, I know him. Miles, Centipaw, all those guys. So from that 93 team, my best friend is still Brian Lockley. I see numerous guys like Dom Caniglio and
Then, Tim, that 93 team is a very close-knit group. There was started with 100 players that year. 26 of them stayed with it through 4 years or through graduation. And that group of 26 is still incredibly close. Our annual golf outing that we hold each spring, we have our post-outing dinner here at Jack's. It's Tim the host then, and all of those guys are always back. And, Tim being in the restaurant business here, I think it attracts a lot of our players over the years. And, they all kind of find this as their second home. It's kind of the rallying spot for most of them.
Yeah.
Tim, talk about, we've said renovations here and how great the place looks. Talk about the new Jack's and what you have going on here for the fall.
The fall, we got 50 big screen HD TVs up, 50 different beers on tap. On Sunday football, we have, 30-cent wings, drink specials. Every day we have 30-cent wings and half-price pizzas. Every night there's a special going on.
The place really looks great, Tim. And I can see by the crowd you got in here tonight that business is going real well. And I just wish you all the best with it. I'm glad things are moving in this direction for you.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Timmy, we appreciate the time. We'll see you every Tuesday. Thanks for coming on, giving us a couple minutes. I am a little remiss if I said I was disappointed when you said first memories. You didn't talk about some of the parties we had at Roselle Avenue.
I don't know what you're talking about.
The first ever football house, right?
Red Solo cups all over the street. That's all I remember.
Tim Canavan, one of the owners here at Jack's Goal Line Stand, giving us a few minutes. We step out, take our last break. When we come back, we will talk about the University of Rhode Island, the next opponent up for Monmouth University. Week number 2 comes up Saturday. We're back right after this to put a capper on week 1 of the Kevin Callahan Monmouth Football Show on the Shore Sports Network.
You're listening to the Kevin Callahan Monmouth Hawks Football Show on the Shore Sports Network, WOBM AM 1160 and 1310, and at shoresportsnetwork.com.
Lauren Bajica helping us out back in the studios tonight of 1160, 1310, WOBM AM, shoresportsnetwork.com. Matt Harmon, Kevin Callahan back here for the final segment at Jack's Goal Line Stand in the West End. Before we get into this week's game, Coach, in the University of Rhode Island, I know something that you are extremely proud of is that you still have those relationships with guys from the 1993 team. 20 years seems like a long time, but it's probably not when you take on a team like Lehigh that has 129 years of football. But to be able to come back to a place where an alum and a former player now owns the restaurant, I think it's a great thing. I know we're very excited to be here, but it's great to be able to still talk old football here at Monmouth.
It is, and I can say this, Matt. The guys that have gone through our program and graduated and gone on to do whatever they do now have all remained very tight, and we try to do things throughout the year to keep them coming back to campus and keep them united with each other. We have an annual spring golf outing. We have a beefsteak during the winter. We have a big doings around homecoming. We're going to have the 20th celebration, you know, barbecue and post-game reception on this Saturday. And those are all events to keep these guys connected with the university, but more importantly, to keep them connected with each other. They've got a great bond. They made so many great friends while they were here. We want to see that continue to keep going and exist.
All right. Before we get into Rhode Island and talk a little bit about this week's game, which is Saturday afternoon at Kessler Field, 1 o'clock, we always like to kind of look at what everybody in the NEC did a week ago. And it was a pretty tough week for the league overall. Albany, the only team that was able to get a win. They beat Colgate by a score of 40-23. Wagner almost pulled an FBS upset against Florida Atlantic. They lost 7-3. But just to run through it real quick, Marist beat Bryant 35-10.
Big surprise there. I was shocked by that one.
Old Dominion beat Duquesne 57-23. It was a pretty close game up until the fourth quarter. James Madison beat St. Francis, Pennsylvania 55-7. Stony Brook over CCSU 49-17. And North Dakota State, the defending national champs, beat Robert Morris 52-0. Factor that in with the Monmouth loss to Lehigh 27-17. As you look back, and, you know, league play hasn't started. It won't for Monmouth until week three against Wagner, but you stay up to date on what everybody's doing week in and week out. I know the one that really surprised you the most was the Marist one against Bryant, but overall impressions of the league from week one?
Well, I think what you're seeing is you're seeing the league as a whole really step up in terms of non-conference opponents. You know, with Wagner playing an FBS school in Florida Atlantic and taking them to a 7-3 game, and you know, people playing members of the CAA and Patriot League schools, you're seeing the league, every member of our league, who really step up and play tough and good quality non-conference opponents. You know, there's been years when we've had the upper hand in some of those games. You know, this opening week, it wasn't quite the same. We didn't have a good week. But I can say this, the quality of football that we're all playing in our non-conference games is going to pay dividends when we get into conference play.
Is it bad for the league when they have a tough week like they did this week, or do you just chalk it up to, hey, it just was a bad week?
Well, I think the first thing you've got to understand is that everybody that an NEC school played this week has more than we all do. They have more in terms of scholarships. They have more in terms of staffing. In many cases, they have, you know, better facilities. And, you know, you're up against a lot when you take on those challenges. But I think you become known, and we will become known as a conference, by who we associate ourselves with. And by associating ourselves with top-quality opponents from very good conferences, we're going to enhance the reputation of the NEC as a whole. And I think that's particularly important when the champion of the NEC gets an automatic qualifier to the FCS playoffs. You don't want the first time that you've played playoff caliber opponents to be in the playoffs. So we're all challenging ourselves now, and that will pay dividends. We saw that a year ago when Albany in the first round of the playoffs had a very, very close game with Stony Brook and really just about pulled off the win there. And the more we challenge ourselves with these quality non-conference games, the better we're going to be as a league.
You know, I feel like we saved this discussion last year for such later in the season. But I think it's a pretty good lead-in to start to talk about URI, who is expected to join the NEC next year as a football-only member. They have declined that invitation and now are heading, or we should say staying, with the CAA. Albany on its way out. They're going to the CAA. Stony Brook is leaving the Big South to go to the CAA, which certainly makes sense. First of all, your impressions of the teams that are leaving to go to the CAA.
Well, with Albany leaving, certainly the NEC is losing a top-flight football program. You know, they're very competitive. They're well-coached. And they have really done a good job of positioning themselves to move into another league. And I think when the CAA came calling, Albany had in place everything that they were looking for. And so they were selected to go into the CAA. I think it's a natural for Stony Brook. Being in the Big South was very cumbersome in terms of travel. It was also very expensive. And I think they were just waiting for either CAA expansion into the Northeast or the formation of a new league of fully funded scholarship football programs in the Northeast. The CAA opportunity came up, and they jumped on that. So I think it was a natural move for them. You know, the landscape in college football from the FBS level to the FCS level has been changing almost on a weekly basis. And I think there's going to be more changes yet as we get out over the horizon. So I think all schools have to position themselves to be able to make choices when those changes occur.
Well, I've got to ask, and I know it's a difficult question and a hard situation to, you know, toe the line a little bit between loyalty to the NEC and maybe either looking ahead, but what does the NEC do? I mean, they can't continue to have teams either leave or continue to look to leave. Is there a possibility that the NEC gets bigger?
Well, I think that's always a possibility. I think the league is always looking to add quality membership, be it in as an associate member in the sport of football or in all sports. And I think there's a number of schools out there that are continuing their search to find an adequate home. And there's a lot of variables that have to be met. You know, certainly proximity, location, you know, travel expenses, level of play, level of scholarships. Those are all things that have to be taken into consideration when people are looking for other leagues to play in or to be affiliated with, and when leagues are looking to bring in new members.
Well, let's talk about one of the teams that is staying in the CAA. They were going to join the NEC in 2013 as a football-only member. They are, ironically enough, are the opponent this week as Monmouth opens up their home schedule with URI. I would say had they looked last week, but they didn't play last week. They had that dreaded kind of week one bye, which I would imagine kind of represents its own unique set of challenges for you as coaches.
It does. It's almost like we're playing an opening game for the second time this season. You know, there's nothing that we have to go on from University of Rhode Island this year. This will be their first game. We're basing our entire game plan on what they did in the last four games of a year ago. But yet in doing that, we're basing it on different personnel. A number of the guys that played for them a year ago won't be playing for them this year. We're doing a lot of best guesswork in terms of trying to predict how they will try to attack us, you know, what formations they're going to use, how they're going to play on defense. And, you know, we're going to have to go into this game with a very general game plan, one that can be adapted very easily on Saturday afternoon.
What do you know, or what can you share with us that you know about the University of Rhode Island?
Well, as a CAA member, they're a fully funded program. They have 63 scholarships. They finished last year with a record of 3-8, but they came on late in the season. They had big wins over the University of Delaware and William & Mary in the closing weeks of the season. They began playing a new quarterback for the last four games who is listed as going to be their starter this year. They returned several players on the defensive front seven, particularly in the defensive line and linebacker positions. By looking at their roster, they have a high number of junior college transfers who are also listed in the two deep. And they have some excellent weapons on offense. I mentioned a quarterback. They have a very talented tight end and a very good playmaker at the receiver position. So I think they're going to try to use the talent that they have and put those guys in position on the offensive side to make plays for them. And on the defensive side, you know, they're going to use their best players to try to take away what we do best.
As a member of the CAA, they obviously play schools like Villanova and James Madison, Delaware, Towson, Maine. Their non-conference schedule is interesting. You know, it's at Monmouth this week. They'll play at Bowling Green at the end of September, and then Brown the first week of October. So I'm going to phrase this as well as I can. You'd have to think that they are looking at Monmouth as, hey, we need to make sure we win this game because things get pretty tough, not only in league, but with our other two non-conference games as well.
I would agree with that. I think that's exactly how they're looking at it. You know, we've only played them at one other time. That was back in 2008 up in Kingston, Rhode Island. We lost that game 27-24. I think they have to look at it, this game as a way to get started off on the right foot. As you mentioned, they have a 1A opponent later in the season in Bowling Green. The CAA, as you know, is a very difficult conference to play in week in and week out. And if they're going to improve on last year's record, they've got to feel that this is a game they have to win.
We've got a few minutes left here on the Kevin Callahan Monmouth Football Show. We are live this Tuesday and each and every Tuesday for the next 11 weeks from Jack's Goal Line Stand in the West End. Probably a dreaded question for you, but not good at home last year. Weren't able to pick up any wins at 0-6. I know that was extremely disappointing and probably somewhat puzzling to you. We won't necessarily talk about that, but is there something different this year that you as coaches are doing, you as the head coach doing, just to change the dynamic? I know you tried some stuff last year, but are you telling guys to sleep on the other side of the bed? Are you having something different for breakfast in the morning on Saturday to try to get on the winning side at home, which you know, and certainly you have stressed, is so important?
It's very important, and I think it's very important for our players. I mean, when we took a look over the winter back at last season and saw what we were able to accomplish as a road team and then what we didn't achieve as a home team, you know, we looked at everything that we do. We looked at schedules. We looked at menus. We looked at time frames. And in going through all that, you know, there may not be any clear-cut answers. I think our guys understand the importance of playing at home and the importance of winning at home. And I think we're going to get that change this Saturday.
When you look at the schedule overall, you know, we didn't necessarily have a preview show, and week one already in the books, week two against the University of Rhode Island. Sum up the Mammoth schedule this year as opposed to the last few years.
I think it's on par with some of the more challenging schedules we've had. Opening up last week with 11th-ranked Lehigh. Later on in the year, we play Cornell University in mid-October, and you know, they're a team that's picked in the top half of the Ivy League. They have an outstanding quarterback, a pro prospect that everybody's talking about. And then we have who's our third non-con?
We had Lehigh.
Rhode Island.
There's only three.
You got it, in Cornell.
Next year you can start looking for a fourth team.
Next year we'll have to have four. That's right.
Coach, this was a lot of fun. We'll do it each and every Tuesday. We will talk to you during the weekend.
You got it, Matt. Thank you very much, as always. And thanks to Tim and Nick here for their hospitality here at Jack's.
Yep, great setup here at Jack's Goal Line Stand. Our thanks to Tim Canavan, Reggie Hildebrandt Jr., and also KB Asante. We step out and say good evening from Jack's Goal Line Stand of the West End. This is the Mammoth Football Show, hosted by Matt Harmon and Kevin Callahan. Good night, everyone.
You've been listening to the Kevin Callahan Mammoth Hawks Football Show on the Shore Sports Network, WOBM AM 1160 and 1310, and at shoresportsnetwork.com. Join us again next Tuesday when we broadcast live from Jack's Goal Line Stand in West End and talk Hawks football. For more on your Mammoth Hawks, visit gomuhawks.com and shoresportsnetwork.com.